Welcome back to the Fascinating Jobs Podcast. I'm your host, Mackenzie Wilson. On this episode of the podcast, I'm sitting down with David Chislett, a fiction and nonfiction author, poet, musician, and public speaker, to talk about the creative process, writing, how you can get involved, and much more. As always, please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen, so that way we can grow our community. With that, let's get into episode number 7 with David. All right. So hi, David. How are you? Thank you for joining us today.
Hey, Mackenzie. I'm well. Thanks for inviting me onto the show.
No problem.
How are you? This is the important question.
I'm doing well today. Thank you. So how did you get started in your career path?
Love of music, basically. I grew up in a family where there was always music playing in the house, and I kind of also became obsessed with it. And by the time I was a teenager in high school, I had a good friend who was pretty good at music, and we formed a band. But I was pretty bad at actually like the music side of things. I kind of sort of sang, and I wrote the words, and he played guitar. And that's pretty much where it all started.
Wow, that's very interesting. I think that's super cool, because I know like a lot of people who are in bands. I know my brother's in kind of a band similar to that. Yeah, so that's really nice where that came from. So you kind of, right now, you have been writing books, short stories, poetry, music. So are there any like skills between the music that are maybe like transferable to other mediums like books or poetry?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you'll often find that people who, like really creative people who are gifted musicians or gifted artists, quite often are actually quite good at something else as well. You know, they're often really good cooks, or they've got a weird like woodworking habit or something like that. So, you know, the key thing to being good at stuff creatively is to be like more flexible in your approach. Not to say, oh, I'm definitely going to do this or everything has to look like that, but to rather step into the space where you go, well, I'm not really sure, and then you start, and as you go, as you experiment, as you try things out, you start to find interesting things out. And that's true of music, it's true of writing poetry, it's true of painting, it's true of almost any artistic creative thing that you can think of.
Oh yeah, that's really interesting. And I think that you bring up a good point, because there might be like a difference in school or in classes between like art class and English class, but they're really kind of all similar. And so just kind of branching off of that, what's been your favorite project that you've worked on, whether that be books or writing music, or if you even have one?
Well, you know, I'm very lucky in that I spent most of my life only doing stuff that I really wanted to. So at the time, the project I was working on was without doubt my favorite. I think some of the things I'm the most proud of, I was involved in a documentary film that was made about the punk rock movement in Southern Africa, which is not something that many people know even existed. So that was super cool. Great documentary film called Punk in Africa, which has been screened all over the world. It can even be downloaded on iTunes now. That's definitely a highlight. But I think for me, possibly the most personal and therefore favorite project was publishing a book of my poetry, which was super cool. A friend of mine talked me into the idea of sending the manuscript of poems to a bunch of musicians that I knew and asking them to, in their own studio, just to choose a poem and record like an acoustic interpretation of the poem. So the book came out with a CD of music versions of the poems. I think that probably is, one of the major highlights so far.
Wow, that is really cool. And I think that's really cool how they kind of like did the music aspect too, because that's something that I've never heard of done before. So what was your favorite part of writing the book of poetry?
Well, the poetry book itself was like a massive experiment. I started out posting poetry on Facebook because I'd seen another poet do it. And I was like, well, I was really interested in the kind of feedback that this other poet was getting. And I thought, well, I've been writing poetry my whole life, but most people didn't know me as a poet. They knew me as a music journalist or a bass player or a band manager. So I started doing that, and I I got such interesting feedback, you know, poems that I thought were super amazing, that I was very proud of, that were very well crafted, and I thought really, you know, gave a strong message. People just didn't react to. Like, there was a silence, no comments. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I'd post a poem a day or so later that I kind of thought, well, you know, it's okay. And I'd get these amazing responses. So I realized that my opinion of what was good or bad with my own poetry just didn't fit with the way people were reacting. So I went on a real mission. I published a poem a day, every day, for 18 months on Facebook. And the book was 90 of the poems that got the best reactions, and the people like basically voted into the book. So it was a really long project, you know, from the start of writing on Facebook to actually releasing the book took more than nearly 3 years to do.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is kind of a long process. And I think that's so interesting how you were kind of able to incorporate like other people on Facebook's input into that process. So was that maybe like one of the most challenging parts, where you had a poem that you really liked and maybe it didn't make it into the book, or what was the most difficult part?
Yeah, I mean, that was difficult, trying to balance, you know, the market feedback into what I was doing with my own personal feelings. That was quite tricky. And, you know, poetry is highly personal. You never know what people are going to say or think. And for me, as someone who had been writing poetry for many, many years, to finally kind of put it out there into the world, that was, yeah, that was quite something. So I'm glad I did it. And I'm actually kind of planning the next one right now. So, yeah, I learned a lot. I learned a lot about just sometimes it's better to let go of your own opinion about how good or bad things are, do the best that you can and put it out there and see what happens. You know, the getting started, the putting it out there part is so, so important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's just kind of like one of the common threads that we've seen along a lot of these episodes, is just like the most important part is just kind of put yourself out there. So would you say that that's kind of a common problem maybe in like music, if you know, like fans aren't really like enjoying a song that you're writing, or does that kind of transcend among different areas of?
Well, I think there are a lot of people in the world who say they're going to write a book, who say they're going to release an album, who say they're going to do a lot of things, and who never actually do it. Maybe because they're scared that what they do isn't good enough, or they're worried about if they do it, what's going to change in their life. So one of the things I've started saying to people is that, you know, something that everyone should learn to get better at is learning how to start things. Because once you start them, everything changes. You change, the environment you're putting the work into changes, and you learn and you grow. But if you're only ever talking about doing stuff, nothing ever changes, you know, and you end up being that guy, you know, the one who's always saying, I'm going to do wonderful things, but has never done anything. And nobody wants to be that guy, surely.
Yeah, definitely. So what would you say is kind of like your advice or your process for actually how to start a project that you might be a little bit scared to do?
I think you've got to let go of your idea about whether it's good enough or not, and you've just got to start. And you've got to be pretty comfortable with the fact that, you know, a fair amount of what you're going to produce, no matter what medium you're in, isn't going to be good enough. But you've got to produce it, you've got to put it out there so that you've got something to work with. You know, everyone's going to produce bad work on some days. That's just a fact of life. Even incredibly well-known famous writers or actors, you know, have bad days and they make absolute rubbish. So if they can come to terms with that, why can't ordinary people? And I think that's really important, is not to get too hung up on this idea that everything needs to be perfect the first time. No great art ever emerged in the form that we see it. It was always a long process where the artist concerned worked their way to that point. So if you don't start, you stand no chance of getting to that end. And all the talking in the world isn't going to change that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that's super unique about kind of all these creative careers, is that like people kind of have different like ways of getting to that end product. They have different kind of creative processes. So what would you say is a good way for somebody to maybe like discover their own creative process?
Well, unfortunately, a similar answer. You know, you've got to get started. Because you can't figure out your way if you're not doing anything. So maybe you've gone to school, maybe you've been taught a certain technique, try it. But then deliberately try and do it differently. Try and do the opposite. Try and break as many rules as you can. Read more. Find out what other people are up to. Do it blindfolded. Because all of these things will give you more information. And the more information you have, I call it collecting the dots, the more connections you can make. And everybody is going to make a set of connections which is kind of unique to them, because no one's had exactly your experiences, no one has exactly your background and been through the same things you have, which means that your choices, the connections you will see, will be different to the next person. And part of the process of great art is establishing that way of connecting the dots. And you've got to discover it as much as anybody else. So you've just got to get out there and get going and understand that it's not an overnight process. And it shouldn't be. I mean, it's fun and you grow and you change. I think if you happen to produce the most perfect work of art the first time you try, what on earth would you do next?
Absolutely, yeah. So I think that's a great point and just like kind of good advice to just get out there and keep getting started and try again, because I think that's something that's maybe a problem now more in today's society is like, you know, people try something once and be like, oh, I'm not that good at it, or this is clearly not for me.
Yeah, I mean, we do. We live in instant gratification culture and pop culture, you know, shows like Idols or The Voice tend to project an idea of overnight success. And the way we talk about people who are really good at stuff is people love to use the word like genius or guru, and you know, things that make it quite clear that everyday people will never be able to do this. But in my experience, that's very far from true. Those people once were also just ordinary people who took their opportunities, worked hard on improving, and showed up every single day and carried on. Even when it was going badly, even when what they were doing was not great, they didn't say, oh man, that was bad, I need to stop. They said, oh man, that was bad. Okay, what exactly went wrong? What did that guy over there do in the same situation that it went well? What can I learn from him? What information am I missing? And that's the difference. You know, if you can have a growth mindset, if you can look at situations that don't work out the way that you wanted and see them as an opportunity to learn more so that you can get better, you're going to go a lot further than the person who gets into situations where things don't work out the way you wanted and gives up.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that you make a good observation there that the difference between like, you know, people who are like really great at something is not like the talent. It's just like how much they persevere and stuff like that. Yeah. So kind of moving on to our next kind of topic of discussion. So how do you find inspiration to write books, stories, poetry, music, etc.?
The big ideas always tend to come at unexpected times when I'm doing unexpected things. And it's not surprising, actually, once you dive into the research that has been done into creative thought. You know, so for example, I tend to get interesting ideas when I'm out running, when I'm in the shower, when I'm doing any task that doesn't really require my conscious mind to be focused. And then what happens is my unconscious mind kind of takes over, you know, because when you're in the shower, like, you know what to do in the shower. You don't have to think about it. It's nice and warm. It's comfortable. You're having a great time. And you can't hear or see anything else except for what's going on in the shower. And those are really important conditions for coming up with ideas and for creative thought. So I make sure that in every single day of every single week, I have moments like that where I can access my more unconscious processing center, because that thing never shuts up. You know, that's why you have such weird dreams. That's your unconscious mind comparing and contrasting and basically kind of defragging the hard drive of your conscious mind and throwing out weird combinations. And it's only when your brain is really quiet, when your consciousness is really quiet, that we seem to be able to take notice of the interesting and startling things that our unconscious is getting up to.
Wow, yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I think it's almost ironic that you kind of have to like consciously make time to not think and not do stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, so, one of the primary rules of creative thought is to not try too hard.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting because a lot of us assume that like you should just try your hardest and like put in the most amount of like thought, but I feel like it's one of those things where it's like work smarter, not necessarily harder.
Yes. Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah, so in your opinion, what's the most challenging part of like any of your creative processes? So like writing or music or any of that?
I think for me, always the most challenging part is what comes after you've made the thing. The production side, the packaging up, the editing, and then putting it out into the world, the marketing and the delivery. You know, it's easy to forget about that stuff because really it's not very glamorous and no one talks about it. But without that, it doesn't matter what you do. People are not going to know about it. So I always find that the most difficult. You know, no matter how long a project takes to finally make, all of that mechanical production and then marketing stuff always takes at least double the amount of time. And that's always the hardest. And people forget about it, you know, which is a pity because they're kind of getting in their own way if you do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so what's one strategy that you use to kind of like get through that like slump of post-production?
Well, now that I know it's coming, I'm always making notes about, hey, when I'm marketing, I need to think about this. Before I'm finished, I'm already making sure I'm lining up a team of people who can help me with whatever is needed, you know, production, design, layout, distribution, blah, blah, blah. So by the time I'm finished, a lot of the groundwork has already been laid, and so it doesn't become, you know, a real pain in the ass, basically, to get it all going.
Yeah, actually, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I think that's like a good tip, and I think that it's something interesting that we kind of like don't necessarily think about when we, you know, see a movie or read a book and, you know, all of like the different editing and rounds of checks that it goes through.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I know that you've kind of found success in many different areas, whether that be like writing books or poetry or music. So how would you recommend that somebody could discover like their passion for one of these areas?
Well, you know, you've got to try a lot of stuff out. You know, I mean, we all hear a lot of music every single day, and there's always lots to read, and there's art everywhere. But I think a lot of time we're so busy with the story that I'm not creative, or, you know, I haven't gone to school, so I don't know how to do that, and it stops us from trying. And I think it's really important to just ignore that totally, and just do it. I mean, some of the greatest art in the world has been made by people who had no schooling. And we all study them now. So, you know, really, on a certain level, schooling's overrated. And in fact, if you want to do truly interesting work, it can even get in the way because it encourages you to follow rules. And if you follow the rules, all you get is more of the same. So if you want to make interesting work, you've got to be able to break the rules. And sometimes if you've spent too long getting schooled in a certain craft or an art, it's very hard to break the rules. So schooling in a particular art is always useful because there's always information and techniques, but you've got to be careful it doesn't get in the way of your instincts and your ability to actually make your own road and create your own path into the future.
Yeah, absolutely. So would you recommend that people generally have like a creative outlet or a hobby that they can turn to if, you know, maybe their day job or their school isn't so creative? Like, is it important to have some sort of hobby to kind of come back to?
Well, look, I mean, I personally believe that creativity is everyone's secret superpower. You know, we're all creative. Most of the time we just kind of ignore our creativity because it's not art. But actually, creativity manifests itself every time you solve a problem, every time you find a new route, every time you learn something. Every time you think about what you want to do in the future, all of that uses exactly the same areas of the brain and exactly the same way as a jazz musician would do when they're playing improv. So I think for me, it doesn't necessarily have to be a hobby or even art, but I think if more people were comfortable with the idea that they're capable of generating something out of nothing, we'd have a lot less unhappy people, because if you can generate stuff out of nothing, that means you have more options, which means you have greater choice, which means that you can at least make a start on escaping whatever situation that you're in. So for me, yeah, hobbies are great because they give you that, but it certainly isn't the only thing. One of my big missions in life is trying to make more people aware of the fact that, you know, actually, without creativity, human intelligence wouldn't exist. So we're all pretty happy with the idea that humans are intelligent. I think we all need to become more comfortable with the idea that that means that all humans are also creative.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you make a good point there, in that it just, creativity just starts with something simple, and like a book is just kind of always starts as an idea, or, you know, different articles. So I know you've mentioned that you kind of write like both fiction and nonfiction titles. So what's the main difference that you find between writing those two?
Well, writing nonfiction, I find personally easier because you can plan a much more rigid structure. Like if you're writing a nonfiction book, it's about a very set subject. And once you've done your research and you've got a good idea about your central theme, it's quite easy to decide where you need to start and therefore where it will end. And once you've got where it starts and where it ends, you just have to ask yourself logically, which steps do I have to go through to get from the beginning to the end? So on that level, I find nonfiction easier because you can build yourself a really strong structure. And once you've got a really strong structure, it keeps you focused and it keeps you motivated, and it's easy to see where you are and where you're going. Nonfiction can be trickier because it's a little more organic. You know, if writing nonfiction has goals, writing fiction has fuzzy goals. You kind of know you're going over here somewhere, but you don't know exactly where, and you're not entirely sure how you're going to get there. So tends to be a far more organic process. I mean, there are writers who are different to that, who plan everything rigorously, but most writers I know plan as much as they can, but they know that as soon as they get going, things are going to change, and they're okay with that. So that for me is the biggest difference.
Absolutely, yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense, because usually nonfiction is about something that's already been discovered or something that kind of somebody else did majority of the work on. So how do you generally, like, when you're writing fiction, kind of guide yourself towards, keep yourself on the path?
Well, first thing is I have a routine. So I book a time of day, and for me that's generally 5 a.m. till 6 a.m. and I make sure I'm sitting down in front of my computer for that hour every weekday to work on the project. I create a loose structure, and I spend quite a lot of time in the beginning thinking about who the characters are, what they like, and what they're going to do, and doing whatever research I might need about subject matter or places that are going to help me be able to talk about these things in a way that's believable. And then the first thing I do every morning before I start is read the last two paragraphs of what I wrote the day before, so that I can pick up the threads and sort of get back into the headspace before I start writing the next day's work. And I try and stay in that chair and write for an hour, which means generally I can write up to 1,500 words, sometimes more like 12, but you know, some days 200. You know, it doesn't always go well. But I find the routine builds momentum, and the momentum is what allows you to figure things out. So that for me is a really important part of writing fiction.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's just something that you should just kind of like show up and like almost kind of just like make yourself do, which I find this super interesting, because in our episode 2, the guest was talking about how her strategy for kind of dealing with stuff and assignments at school we were talking about is just like writing a schedule and saying, hey, you know, from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m., I'm going to sit down and just work on this, and all you kind of have to do is just like show up. So I think that's really interesting in how that can be used in so many ways. So yeah, I think that's a very cool parallel. Like, that's one of my favorite parts of the podcast, is just seeing like all the similarities between all of the guests, because really, like, there are so many connections, even like depends on. So kind of talking about like somebody who's a beginner, what's some advice that you'd give to somebody who wants to explore a career based around their creative passion?
Be gentle with yourself. and don't get hooked up on don't get too attached to how you see it going now, because it will change, because you will change. And also, the world is changing fast, and the technology that's available to us to be creative is changing so fast that there's a very good chance that what you start out doing may not be a thing in even 5 years, let alone in 25 years. So I think you've got to be very forgiving on yourself. You've got to give yourself a lot of room to fail and to learn and to experiment. And, you know, we live in a very homogenized culture. You know, the forces of marketing and advertising and big brands are all telling us to dress the same way, to think the same way, to buy the same car, and to have the same opinions about status and success and love. And if you really want to make great art, you've got to be able to resist that stuff. You've got to be able to step out of those lanes and have something to say. And that's not always easy to do. And it's not for everyone. You know, not everyone has to do it, and not everyone can. So it's always good to ask yourself the hard questions from quite early on.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's really important to just kind of be flexible, because as you mentioned, like, there's so much new technology that's coming out, and I feel like people have more opportunities to kind of do things like, you know, in another episode we're talking about how, you know, 20 years ago you could not start your own podcast or, you know, self-publish a book, like all sorts of those kind of things. So just kind of talking about beginnings, if you could fix one mistake that you made at the beginning of your career, what would it be?
Nah, I don't believe in that. My official policy is no regrets, because sure, I made a lot of mistakes, but that also meant I learned a lot of stuff. So I'm not too worried about that, seriously. And just to pick up on what you said there, you know, technology has lowered the barrier to entry to such an extent that, you know, pretty much anyone can release an album or make a podcast or a film. But what that does mean is that the people out there who want to consume that stuff are finding it very difficult to identify good stuff as opposed to the dross that occupies the rest of these digital aggregators. And if you're not turning up every day, and if you're not focused on improving, you know, you run the risk of just getting drowned in this ocean of content that's being created.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's kind of an important point that you make, that might be kind of like a negative to having everybody be able to kind of create whatever they like. So what's your kind of strategy on like weeding out like what you think is maybe like garbage? Like, do you spend a lot of time on social media kind of looking at all of that stuff? Or do you maybe just keep to your own self and do what you think is best?
I'm not too busy with the work that other people are creating. Mm-hmm. In the sense that I'm not on social media going, oh, that's cool, I need to be worried about that. But I mean, I am out there doing, meeting people, learning, trying, observing, reading. But it's just, I'm trying not to compare myself to stuff, you know? So if I see something that I think is interesting, I'm going to dive into it, not because I see it as being better than what I'm doing or threatening in any way, even though it might be, but because I'm like, well, that I can learn from. So, I mean, you know, don't always get that right. Sometimes I am just threatened or intimidated. But my approach is to rather look at things like as sources rather than threats.
Yeah, I think that's definitely an interesting perspective and something that we should all kind of take into consideration, because I feel like that is one of the harms of social media, is just kind of like the constant comparison that you get to other people, even if you do it just subconsciously.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think just kind of one final wrap-up question. So how do you think that creativity kind of plays a role in the daily lives of people?
It plays a huge role. without creativity, you can't learn, you can't solve problems. I do believe it could play an even bigger role in making the average human being feel more fulfilled, more aligned with purpose, and more empowered to act in our world. And I think it is one of the great tragedies of the modern age that so many people do not think they are creative. And unfortunately, I believe that serves the people who already have too much money and too much power. So I would like to see more people rising up and owning their creativity and making more stuff, because that would balance out what is currently a very imbalanced situation where major corporations and major brands have far too much influence over ideas of what's creative and what's good and what's right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you raise a good point that people will just kind of like believe lots of different things at this point, but it's not until you internalize it that it becomes important. Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I think that's a good wrap up and stopping place for our discussion today. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. I had a really great time talking with you.
Thanks, Mackenzie. It's been great. Yeah, interesting conversation. Thank you very much.
If you're interested in learning more about novel writing and the fiction writing process in general, tune in next week where I'll be talking to a YA fiction writer about all things writing and publishing. A special thanks to David for joining me today. You can check out his website, www.davidchislett.com, or check him out on Instagram at patreon.poet or on Patreon at David Chislett. You can check out this podcast on our website, www.fascinatingjobs.xyz, or on Instagram at fascinating_jobs_pod, or Twitter at fascinatingjobs. Tag me with any questions or comments, and be sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to this podcast to let us know you're enjoying it. And if you or someone you know has a fascinating job, email us at fascinatingjobspod@gmail.com for a chance to be a guest on the show. Thank you so much for listening and enjoying this podcast, and I'll see you in the next episode.